black and white film of quiet London streets, then Hugh Bonneville.
Taxi! This is the story of a bear called Paddington Brown. Although most people know him as plain Paddington.
Paddington Station.
The man who gave Paddington to the world was an unassuming genius called Michael Bond.
This is more or less the spot where I always imagine Paddington being found.
He conjured up the little bear over 60 years ago. In times we only seem to remember in black and white. He sold three times more books than there are children in Britain, and his TV shows and films have made him internationally famous. Not bad for a stowaway from Peru. He found a home with a family in London.
I'm not really supposed to be here at all. I'm a stowaway.
But why would the Browns fall for a bear who, despite his good intentions, causes chaos? And quite frankly, didn't even have a passport. Wouldn't it have been easier for everyone if they just sent him back? But it seems Michael Bond gave Paddington something we all need deep down. So, now I've got your attention, we'll begin the story of a man called Michael Bond and a bear called Paddington.
Paddington, the man behind the bear. Christmas decorations in London, including miniature hot air balloons over a street. Michael Bond, start the week 1970.
Michael Bond, how did Paddington first come into your life?
He came into my life one Christmas when I was in a large London store and it was Christmas Eve. And I happened to notice a bear left on the shelf and everything else had been sold. It sounds rather silly, but I felt sorry for him at the time. I bought him. We were living near Paddington Station, so it seemed natural to call him Paddington. I'd always wanted to use the name because it sounds rather important.
Supposing the bear had arrived not at Paddington, but at Uttoxeter, for instance, or West Drayton or somewhere like Paddington, it works, doesn't it?
Paddington, just the word Paddington. The sound of padding feet is suggested, as well as the sort of stateliness of the original English railway station. But the Paddington is just sort of such a lovely word on its own.
Paddington removing clumps of wax from his ears with a pair of toothbrushes.
Paddington has recently delivered two celebrated performances of great depth and comic flair.
He licks the wax. Revolted, he dunks his head in the toilet.
Working alongside some of Britain's finest actors, and me, these two movies have arguably made Paddington the world's preeminent ursine performer. I can tell you for a fact, Mrs. Bird, it is not going to rain indoors.
A drip falls from the ceiling.
Oh no.
A deluge of water cascades out of the bathroom, with Paddington surfing the wave in a bathtub.
Paddington is no overnight sensation. He's actually been working very hard, charming generations since the 1950s.
Nice weather for the ducks.
In a series of well-loved books. And here are some of Paddington's fans reading a passage in which our hero unexpectedly finds himself seeing a psychiatrist.
As a matter of fact, continued Mr. Hines casually, I'd like to play a little game. It's really to test your reactions.
Now I'm going to call out some words quite quickly, and each time I call one out, I want you to give me another one, which has the opposite meaning, right? Wrong, said Paddington promptly.
Mr. Hines paused with his pen halfway to the paper. What's the matter? He asked crossly. Aren't you comfortable?
Oh, yes, said Paddington, but you told me to say the opposite every time you gave me a word. He sat up and gave the man behind the desk another hard stare.
Wait until I give you the go-ahead. Once you start, I don't want to hear anything else. I'll give you a countdown, beginning now. 3, 2, 1, go.
Stop, said Paddington. Mr. Hines opened his mouth and then appeared to change his mind.
Big? Mr. Hines said hopefully.
Small, said Paddington promptly.
Fast, said Mr. Hines.
Slow, said Paddington.
Mr. Hines gave a chuckle. We've finished, he began.
No, we've started, said Paddington. No, we haven't, said Mr. Hines. Frosty. Yes, we have, said Paddington.
No, 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 shouted Mr. Hines, thumping his desk.
Yes, 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 cried Paddington, waving his paws in the air. Will you stop? Yelled Mr. Hines.
No, I won't, cried Paddington, nearly falling off the couch in his excitement. Oh, God, that's good, isn't it?
Mr. Hines looked wildly around the room. Why did I ever take this up? He cried, burying his face in his hands. I should have my head examined.
It's a great idea to send him to a psychiatrist.
Have his head examined.
Good luck with that, mate.
Oh, bless him.
Paddington Bear may have arrived at Paddington Station from a faraway land, but where did he really come from? What was Michael Bond's inspiration? The answer isn't what you might think.
Here's writer and actor Simon Farnaby sauntering down the road.
Simon co-wrote the screenplay for the second Paddington movie and played Barry the security guard in both films, with a dim, if disconcerting, charm.
Lovely day, innit? Unusually hot.
Yeah. Just like you.
Simon's visiting Michael Bond's daughter, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Hello, Simon. Hello. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
He's come to see some precious Paddington treasures.
Yes.
There's the man himself.
Absolutely.
I often get people shouting at me in the street, Oi! That's one.
Yes.
Oi!
Attention all units, an unusually attractive nun is causing mayhem in the cathedral dome. Activate emergency protocol. Stop that stunning sister.
I set off at lightning speed.
Michael, he always puts Paddington up against these authority figures.
Yes.
You know, policemen or judges or, you know, psychiatrists or people who are supposed to be in the know, and he always somehow gets the better of them.
Yeah, which of course is always what my father loved. He said you've got to have this build-up, and at the end you know that Paddington's going to come out on top.
I think his suitcase must have looked something like this one. Genuine leather with a half-empty jar of marmalade inside.
This was one of my father's very early typewriters.
I don't know what the shift key is on this.
So I think it's return is, you have to do it by hand.
Oh, God.
It's hard work.
It is hard work. Right, Mr. and Mrs. Brown.
First met Paddington.
Simon taps at the keys.
Really, I'm going great guns now. Yes. Comma?
No. Oh. On a railway platform. Mr. and Mrs. Brown first met Paddington on a railway platform. In fact,
that was how he came to have such an unusual name for a bear. For Paddington was the name of the station.
Very good.
It's a great opening passage, that, isn't it? Because it's sort of quite an unusual thing to have a sort of talking bear character, but in that first paragraph, it normalises it. But it goes, don't worry, there's a bear.
Yeah.
Don't think too much about it.
Mrs. Brown bent down. You're a very small bear, she said. I'm a very rare sort of bear, he replied importantly. There aren't many of us left where I come from. And where is that? Asked Mrs. Brown. The bear looked around carefully before replying, Darkest Africa.
Hugh frowns.
Darkest Africa?
What we have here are some very special letters. This is the letter that his agent wrote to him when he had sent him the very first manuscript for A Bear Called Paddington.
I've now read your novel, A Bear Called Paddington. My spies tell me, however, that you have slipped up in that there are no bears in Africa, darkest or otherwise. Oh, I love that.
Is that fabulous?
Yeah. And I suggest that you make suitable amends. There are plenty of bears in Asia, Europe and America. And quite a few on the stock exchange.
So where would Michael Bond have looked to find a natural home for a little bear? To give you a clue, here is a message from an ambassador.
Juan Carlos Gamarra, the Peruvian ambassador.
been very proud to be a Peruvian diplomat throughout my career. My job here is made a bit easier because, of course, I have a great ally with Paddington. If you see him in the near future, tell him that he has a desk waiting for him here at the embassy so that he can help me promote my country. Take a plane and go and visit Peru as soon as possible.
From the spectacular mountains of Peru to the beautifully landscaped Chester Zoo, bear keeper Lucy Edwards is preparing some animal food.
I think when Michael Bond realised that there were no African bears, he had to come up with another plan, and he went to London Zoo, Regent's Park, and he saw the spectacle bears there. And they're from Peru, so he decided that Paddington was going to be from darkest Peru.
Come on in. Watch out for poo.
There's another one. We'll stop talking about poo now. So this is our little version of Peru right here. There are no oranges in Andean bear habitat. I think they'd struggle to make marmalade, to be honest. Am I completely squashing the dream of marmalade sandwiches now? So this is Bernie. He sounds a bit stupid, but he's very gentlemanlike. He often uses things like rocks and logs in the enclosure as a table. He's very polite. His table. So I do see a lot of Paddington in them. We rarely see a hard stare from Bernie.
Lucy trying a hard stare. Then Paddington giving Henry Brown a hard stare.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Paddington is a wild animal. In fact, he's more civilized than the humans around him, almost all of them. The point of a hard stare is it's supposed to wake up the shame in someone, isn't it? A stare that sees into the back of the soul and is not quite sure that it likes what it sees back there, you know? The Paddington stare is the answer to our parliamentary problems and our political problems. If people just, you know, when a politician goes a bit too far, just fold their arms and go,
Stephen Fry stares and tuts. Then the Peruvian ambassador does his best hard stare. A real life bear looking directly into the camera. Then Paddington's hard stare. From Michael Bond's memoir, Bears and Forebears.
It isn't easy to capture a bear's likeness in a few lines, but Peggy Fortnum does it all to perfection with her pen and ink drawings. She understands Paddington perfectly, and with a few seemingly deft strokes, perhaps portraying a back view of him walking down a street lost in thought, she manages to convey a living, breathing creature. The shagginess, the slightly hunched figure, the purposeful air say it all.
Oh, yeah, you're right there. I think what I enjoy about Peggy's illustrations is that some of them are very, very simple and very pared back. I mean, a picture like this, that they feel quite quickly done, which is not to say she won't have done a lot of work. I mean, if I know anything about illustration, it's that you draw something over and over and over and over.
Lola, look at this! My go!
Paddington influenced my feelings about the animation for my Charlie and Lola series, because Paddington really is a child.
Sorry.
Peggy's illustrations perfectly complement Michael's writing, which shows somebody really vulnerable and really needing help, but quite innocent. He's a very innocent character, and I think it's part of the reason he's so lovable.
Hugh holds up a pair of opera glasses.
Paddington turned and came slowly back down the beach. He took out his opera glasses and peered through them at the figures already in the water. There were fat men in shorts, thin men in bathing costumes. Some wore sun hats, some caps, others coloured hats made of cardboard. As he sat there deep in thought, Paddington's eyelids began to feel heavier and heavier. Several times he pushed them open with a paw, but gradually the combination of a large breakfast, several ice creams, and all the walks up and down the sand in the hot sun, not to mention the distant sound of waves breaking on the seashore, grew too much for him. And a short while later, some gentle snores added themselves to the general hubbub all around.
when you hear in your head the mixture of this young bear, and yet he also has the qualities of an old gentleman. Like me now, I'm that age. Oh, like that. There's something very divine about it. I think that's part of Michael Bond's non-patronising way of telling stories for children.
Karen, Michael Bond's daughter.
There's a wonderful one of him on the beach with my grandfather when he's quite a small boy, wearing, actually, it could be a Paddington hat, funnily enough. And my grandfather in this photograph is smoking a pipe. Yes, he certainly inspired Mr. Brown.
People sometimes ask me if he's based on me. Well, he's really based on my father, because when we used to go on holiday, if he went in the sea with me, he always kept wearing his hat in case he met somebody, he needed something to raise.
Keep your eyes down, there's some sort of bear over there, probably selling something. Good evening. No, thank you. Oh dear.
Paddington transcends the ages, but he keeps those early values, which is the sort of politeness, the thinking about others, that the slightly slower pace of life.
He's a very gentle character, but he's a very moral character. What he does manage to do is always spread a sort of goodness around. He is the perfect sort of metaphor for what perhaps we would like in society.
Your change, madam. Thank you.
Paddington's good manners came directly from Michael Bond's upbringing in the peaceful town of Reading in the 1920s and 30s. It was a halcyon age that drew to a close after Neville Chamberlain came back with some exceedingly good news from Europe. But as tends to be the case in these sorts of things, it didn't quite work out.
So Britain prepares to fight.
Children being evacuated.
A massive evacuation of over 1 million children from British cities began.
These children are setting out on what is to them a great adventure.
Many left Paddington Station for provincial towns like Reading. Here, Michael Bond's parents opened their home to evacuees. In 2010, a letter to film producer Rosie Allison contained a poignant detail. Michael revealed children also came to his home from Nazi Germany, and they had a direct influence on Paddington.
We took in some Jewish children who often sat in front of a fire in the evening, quietly crying, because they had no idea what had happened to their parents, and neither did we at the time. It's the reason why Paddington arrived with the label around his neck. Clearly, Michael Bond was haunted by his own experience of evacuees when he was young. And that expanded in the creation of Paddington into a character who is the quintessential representative of all refugees, immigrants, and that is a timeless character.
I'm looking for when my father was actually in the army, out in Egypt. Where was it? And he was in Cairo, and while he was out there, he wrote a story, and it was accepted for publication, and he actually received 7 guineas. 7 guineas would have been a lot of money in those days, and really quite exciting. He certainly never anticipated that any of his writing would bring him the success that it did.
On the way home after the war, Michael witnessed a sight the writer in him would never forget.
An aircraft swoops in low across the bow of a ship.
In October, I made my final journey back to the UK. In Gibraltar, where we stopped for a few hours, there was a small open ship moored a little way apart from all the others. It was packed to suffocation with Jewish refugees, men, women and children, making their way to Palestine. And for the first time, as I gazed down at them, I felt ashamed to be British. For clearly they were crying out for help, and equally clearly, they were unlikely to get it. Man's inhumanity to man knows no bounds.
Refugees huddled together, looking out across the sea. Paddington's epic journey.
Michael Bond's wartime experiences emerge in the stories in many subtle ways. The first Paddington movie depicts the tragedy in Peru that makes Paddington a displaced bear.
Uncle Pastuzo!
And sets him off on an epic journey.
Pastuzo!
There's a universal story. That desire for a home and acceptance and a sense of belonging is the universal story of Paddington.
You must find a new home in London.
But I don't know anyone there. What if they don't even like bears?
Aunt Lucy's speech in the lifeboat is this potted history of refugee crises in British history. Try writing that for the under fives.
There was once a war in the explorer's country. Thousands of children were sent away for safety, left at railway stations with labels around their necks, and unknown families took them in and loved them like their own.
There's something in the wording of that label which is absolutely wonderful. It doesn't say, hello, I'm a bear, hello, my name's Paddington, or please help me, because Paddington would never ask for help for himself.
Remember your manners and keep safe.
It feels like that is a global story, not just of refugees, but of anyone who's ever felt like an outsider or anyone who's ever found themselves in a new place.
Paul King, director of Paddington and Paddington 2. Young children watching the first film at school.
He left because there was an earthquake and it was too dangerous for him, so he had to leave by boat. He couldn't go by plane because he doesn't have a ticket or anything.
Children's charity UNICEF adopted Paddington as a champion.
He's a talking bear, Paddington.
Using his story to help children understand what it feels like to be an immigrant.
Sometimes bears, but usually people, children, travel from other countries to make their home here. We could call him a refugee bear.
He's homeless.
He's homeless, that's a good way of putting it, isn't it?
A bear called Paddy.
Lots of the children from this class have come from other countries, or at least they've got experience of having separation or family separation, people they've left behind. So I think there are parts of Paddington's story that they can really connect with.
What would you take this time if you were going to go to a different country on a big journey?
I have ice cream, a pizza, toothbrush, soap and slime.
He can stand for any kind of race, or he can be whatever they imagine him to be. So yeah, it's been a really good fit. Also, they really like bears.
Paddington! Oh, sorry, I like it.
Well then, Paddington, how would you like to come home with us?
London is the place for me.
So, after his great trek from Peru, Paddington finds himself heading to a new home in London's Notting Hill.
London is the place for me. London, that lovely city.
Perhaps we shouldn't be very surprised that this was also where Michael and his new wife, Brenda, settled in the 1950s, after making a less arduous journey from Reading.
We were in a one-room flat then. That was in Arundel Gardens. It's just off Ladbroke Grove. And good material ran for him to write about.
Living in London, you're really comfortable. All the English people are very much sociable.
There was an awful lot of material in Notting Hill in the 50s, where the newlyweds weren't the only new arrivals.
London is the place for me.
Legendary Calypsonian Tobago Crusoe sang this song in the Paddington movie.
You can go to Spain or America, England is your...
London is the place for me actually came from Jamaica on the Empire Windrush.
Now, I'm told that you are really the king of calypso singers, is that right?
Yes, that's so true.
Will you sing for us?
Right now.
Yes.
London is the place for me.
London is the place for me. When you're in the Caribbean in those days, England was land of hope and glory, recruiting workers to come to London. And my goodness, the ship was full in no time. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia. You gotta come back to London City.
Peter Joseph was one of those new arrivals back in the 50s.
Pannington Beer came here in 1958. I arrived the 3rd of November 1956. And I'm sure that he had a better reception than I did, because I had a hell of a lot of fuss. We were seen as a subspecies, and that's how it remained for a very long time.
There's the young Michael Bond, and he's in Notting Hill, which was the locus of the race riots. It's the place where a lot of the Windrush generation came to settle. Michael Bond could hardly have been unaware of that. It was, you know, it was newsworthy, to say the least.
When we were going to look for work, there were these guys, the security guys in uniform, used to be at the bottom of the gate. And as soon as we turn in, they will be like tic-tac men. No job, no work.
One bright December morning, Paddington decided to make himself useful in the garden. Looking round, he realised he was being watched. "Ahem," said a man, looking over the railings. "Forgive me, I can see you're busy. Please don't bother to stand up." Paddington looked most offended. "I am standing up," he announced. "Oh, I do beg your pardon, but I assumed you were a jobbing gardener, a refugee from some foreign clime, perhaps. I wonder, are your employers at home?" "My employers?" repeated Paddington, growing more and more upset. "But I live here."
"Come on, you two, or you'll be late for school."
I think Michael does certainly touch on ideas of racism.
"You must be a long way from home."
"I'm from darkest Peru."
"Oh."
The intolerant characters call him Bear. So Mr. Curry always just shouts, "Bear!" and sort of waves his fist.
"Oh.
Don't worry, Mr. Curry, he's going."
Everyone knows what Mr. Curry is.
"Don't want to be kept up by any of your loud jungle music."
Certainly the last film version made it very clear, didn't it, that Paddington himself, being a stranger, welcomed in as an immigrant, was on the side of other immigrants, and the villainous characters in the Paddington franchise are those who are closed to change and immigration and strangers.
"But I wouldn't care to have an undesirable crawling all over my premises."
And that's one reading, and obviously it's one that really annoyed the Daily Mail and the Farages of the world, who thought, now they've stolen our Paddington from us. But it's a pretty legitimate reading, to be honest.
"You're asking me to intellectualise a children's story, which I'm not sure that really washes. Yes, he was an immigrant. Yes, he was adopted by a kindly family. Yes, he was fundamentally a kind person who just got into scrapes. And I'm just saying a kind person. Obviously, he was Bear, but just ignore that fact. This is a symbol of something completely English, even though, of course, Paddington was Peruvian."
Peter Joseph is on a street of white Victorian terraces.
Arundel Gardens, the home of Paddington Bear. I told you I knew where he lived. A place that I can only have dreamt of in the early days. Oh, gosh, it's beautiful.
"This is where I wrote the very first Paddington book. In fact, it all seems rather strange, because if I hadn't been living here at the time, and if I hadn't bought the bear, I suppose there wouldn't really have been a Paddington at all."
So here on this street, Michael's wife Brenda became the first person to read about a bear called Paddington.
"I came home from work and he gave me these very nicely typed sheets. And by the time I got to the end of it, I knew it. It's easy to say now, but I did know that was a winner."
"I wish," said Paddington,
as he stood at the door waving everyone goodbye. I wish my Aunt Lucy could see me now. She'd feel very pleased. You'll have to write and tell her all about it, Paddington, said Mrs. Brown as she took his paw. But in the morning, she added hastily, you've got clean sheets, remember? Yes, said Paddington, in the morning. I expect if I did it now, I'd get ink over the sheets or something. Things are always happening to me. You know, Henry, said Mrs. Brown,
as they watched Paddington go up the stairs to bed, looking rather sticky and more than a little sleepy. It's nice having a bear about the house.
A Bear Called Paddington was published on October the 13th, 1958. And Michael was delighted to find that the first print run sold out by Christmas.
But that wasn't enough to pay the bills. Luckily, Michael had a proper job in the cutting-edge world of television.
He worked as a cameraman by day and wrote Paddington books by night. This was television's first golden age, even if it was all in black and white.
There's nothing worse than a rotten copper.
Michael was there from the very beginning, and he helped create the greatest children's show of them all.
Well, how about that then? Come on, don't eat me. Eat this.
In a year's time, they'll be big enough to swipe a man and kill him with one paw. Isn't that awful?
So, I don't really think we're going to have them on the programme again.
Ooh, a Blue Peter studio. Wow, look at that. Oh my gosh, look at these cameras. They're so small. I bet Michael Bond would have loved working with one of these.
Valerie Singleton.
Michael Bond was always rather nicely dressed and rather a nice, calm sort of person. And, of course, Paddington Bear was the same age as Blue Peter because he was born in 1958 and Blue Peter was born in 1958. Am I allowed to sit on a Blue Peter set?
Well, last week we had a large black bear cub on the programme and we've got another bear cub on the programme this week. This is a Malayan sun bear, and of course they like honey and syrup if they can get hold of them.
Valerie's in the Blue Peter garden.
Where's Petra? Oh, good memories. We used to feature Paddington bear stories in the Blue Peter programme, and of course he featured in a lot of the albums from about the third album onwards.
Yes, it's the third and latest Blue Peter book.
Paddington takes the cake. Paddington's won a prize in a Blue Peter competition. Mr. Brown lowered his newspaper and stared across the breakfast table. I suppose if he wins, we should be living on marmalade for the rest of our lives. Bear, said Mrs. Brown expressively, as the rest of the family sat back in their chairs and looked at each other. Paddington, echoed the others. You know, I'm kind of wondering now whether, you know, it was this lovely coverage that we gave Michael Bond in the annuals that perhaps was responsible for the success of Paddington Bear.
The Blue Peter annuals helped boost Paddington's profile with British children. And with the pleasing circularity of a Paddington story, some of those children became Blue Peter presenters themselves.
Thank you very much.
Take that and treasure it.
I will indeed.
Paddington's not only famous because of Michael Bond's clever stories, but also because of the way he looks. I think my love affair with Paddington began when we got a Viewmaster. And I remember very clearly loving Paddington Takes a Bath. And my elder sister had the whole set of Paddington books. Being the youngest of three, they worked their way down through the siblings and then they got to me.
Connie Hugg.
I did have a real sort of soft spot for Paddington. Paddington always felt like a bit of an outsider. You know, I would remember as a child, I had a play date coming back to my house. You know, I'd think, oh, you know, Mum, Dad, you know, if we're having, can we have fish fingers instead of curry tonight? You know, you just want to fit in.
A photo of Connie with her family.
I remember when I got my job on Blue Peter, there was a lot said about first British Bangladeshi presenter on Blue Peter. And I wanted to say, but I'm normal too.
And here we even have him in his evening clothes, ready for a trip to the theatre. When they
were put on the books try and put you in Paddington's shoes to say, you know, it doesn't matter where someone's from, it doesn't matter what their background is. You know, we're all the same, essentially.
In 1966, with six books published, Paddington was providing just enough money for Michael to make a very big decision.
He always said that he'd love to be able to retire by the time he was 40 to write full-time, and that's what he actually ultimately achieved.
But his first writing job out of retirement was back at the BBC. The Watch with Mother slot was falling behind the times. This was the swinging 60s, after all, and Bill and Ben were looking a little tired. Perhaps they'd got Bill and Ben on the wrong sort of pot or something. Anyway, did Michael have any ideas? Yes, he did.
Herbivorous.
He'd been cultivating one at home with his wife, Brenda.
As you can see, parsley is a lion.
Well, here we've got Paddington, my own private famous one. They're all Paddingtons, of course. And in the front, we've got parsley, the lion, from the herbs, which was one of Michael's other creations.
Why are they all by your bed?
Well, where else do you keep three bears and...
Parsley's very proud of his tail.
Michael's idea was for a show about the colourful adventures of stimulating garden herbs, which he pitched to the powers that be.
When he got home, I said, oh, how did you get on? And he said, oh, yes, they liked the idea very much. He said, they asked me if I could write some songs. No, I don't write songs, but my wife does. So I said, well, I've not actually written any songs. But when do you want them? He said, well, it's Tuesday. Friday will do. Now, that was typical of Michael.
I'm not very good at sorting things out, and often I get in a muddle.
Parsley the lion on Tom Tom, there's a puzzle for you. In the studio, we have Michael Bond.
So you don't make the films yourself, I know.
No, I write the scripts, and then I pass these over to Ivor Wood, who does the animation.
Ivor Wood, filmmaker extraordinary.
Now, you may not have heard of the half-French, half-Yorkshire genius, Ivor Wood.
A little bit further, bringing his hand out.
But viewers of a certain age will have seen his masterworks.
The Magic Roundabout.
A woozy fantasia called The Magic Roundabout, which made absolutely no sense, and featured odd animals seemingly off their faces.
Dougal showed Brian his vacuum cleaner. It's gone mad.
Now, to work.
And the Wombles, the adventures of early climate change activists from Wimbledon Common, narrated by Bernard Cribbins.
Stop, I feel seasick.
The stop frame animation, it has a wonderful charm, and the Wombles was such a huge success on television. The whole thing, I think, was exceptional. Yeah, including me.
I hope one of my Wombles has found a copy of the Times.
Ivor Wood had ushered in a second golden age of children's TV, this time in colour.
The Wombles of Wimbledon, common are we.
The Wombles had been its crowning achievement, but what could possibly top the Wombles? In 1974, Ivor and Michael put their heads together and thought very hard. Well, not that hard. Paddington was right under their noses after all. Michael had written 10 very popular books about him by then, and a TV series might make Paddington Britain's favourite bear.
I can still remember the theme tune.
On the 5th of January 1976, a whole new generation of British children were introduced to a young Peruvian bear who valued good manners as much as their grandparents.
It's just one of the strongest memories from my childhood.
A 3D stop-motion Paddington in a blue duffel coat and black hat against a 2D hand-drawn background.
I remember the show very well. We only ever had a black and white television.
I'm sorry, I'm not used to escalators. We don't have any in darkest Peru.
So I've remembered it wrong. But what I remember very clearly is him being three-dimensional, but everything else was drawn. I think that was a really, really inspired thing to do, because he is the sort of heart of every story. And to have him as the only real thing, it was really clever.
Ladies and gentlemen, announced Paddington, my next trick is impossible.
But you haven't done one yet, called Mr. Curry. You can't have a next trick if you haven't done a first one.
Ignoring the remark, Paddington turned over the page. For this trick, he said, I shall require an egg. Oh dear, said Mrs. Bird as she hurried out to the kitchen. I know something dreadful is going to happen.
Watching Paddington had a surprising influence on little Heston Blumenthal.
Abracadabra.
He made up his mind to become a sort of magician, and like Paddington, he would never give up.
One of my favourite stories
was
when Paddington does a magic trick.
Are you going to do some magic for us, though?
Yeah, well, I'm going to try. So what my plan is to change these flowers into an egg. Taking a petal from a rose. Then, with this rose petal...
Stop it!
You're going to put this egg into a cocktail shaker.
Okay. Abracadabra.
Now take the egg out. Crack the egg into the pan.
Okay.
You have a look at what comes out of the egg. It's a custard.
Oh my goodness! Okay, that's a custard.
So now what I need to do is scramble your saffron egg custard. But I'm not using gas. I'm going to use...
liquid nitrogen.
Some liquid nitrogen.
So this isn't dangerous, is it?
No.
Okay, fine.
Well, actually, yes. Yes, it is. It's very dangerous. And something that Mr. Brown, a sensible man, wouldn't touch with a barge pole. But then again, Heston's probably been inspired by Paddington's recklessness. Or is it innocence? Or maybe bravery?
It's freezing it, so I'm actually making an ice cream.
Wow, okay, I'm into this.
Paddington had a pretty big influence in the sense of perseverance. You just keep trying and trying again, and in the process, you might blow something up.
Perhaps I could borrow your wristwatch, Mr. Curry. I cover it with the handkerchief, so, and I hit it with the hammer. Oh dear.
Scrambled egg.
There we go, scrambled egg.
And you need some marmalade. And you need a lid first. The moment that doesn't look like a lid.
Oh, okay.
Oh, the blowtorch. Of course.
Let's see.
That's great!
So we just need to wait for this lid to cool down a little bit.
Okay, well look, here's one you made earlier. Ah, there we go. Crack, crack, crack. And then put a bit on. So this is a proper breakfast, an all-in-one.
It's a proper breakfast
and
dessert, yes.
I love it. It's so good.
With a magic egg.
Paddington would thoroughly approve of that.
There.
I don't think I shall reappear again for a long time.
Each episode of the first series of Paddington was watched by millions of children and their parents. The stowaway had become a star. Then, the inevitable happened. Michael Bond started getting hundreds of requests from people who wanted to use his bear's image on their products. Paddington was about to shift a lot of units.
This is a 45 record. It's Aunt Lucy Sings, so it's the songs of Paddington, and that's me there.
This is Barry.
My name's Barry, Barry Macy.
The real Barry.
Hold it there, sister. Spin it around.
There was a Barry, a security guard in the film. Yeah, he was quite a good character, I thought. A bit of a dolt, and I'm not a dolt, but, you know, us Barrys must stick together.
For a brief, busy period back in the early days, Barry single-handedly produced every drawing of Paddington Bear on every piece of Paddington merchandise.
There's a hot water bottle cover.
And there really was an awful lot of it.
And on these bowls, Michael used to come up with the words, and I put the picture. When my youngest daughter was still in her high chair, My wife taught her to recognise words, and Paddington Bear really taught my daughter Hannah to read. But my knack was, I understood Paddington entirely, you know, just understand urban bear, goes shopping, talks very polite, you know, got a hard stare, and he says, thank you very much, you know, thank you, he's polite. And that's what I like about him. There's just something about Paddington, like, I can't put it into words, really. It's just, it's part of me, really. Good old Paddington.
Once, the creative core of the Paddington merchandising industry consisted of Barry.
Rose Badger is also a mirror, so it was a sort of very handy little... And they were very, very popular.
And even with Michael providing the words, he couldn't keep up with the demand.
Hello, Bear. Hey, you look a little bit lost.
What does a bear like Paddington do?
Even in those most austere times, people were buying up any Paddington product they could get their hands on.
Look at this magnificent row of Paddingtons. They go on and on forever.
He says, Marmalade.
Paddington Bear teddies in various TV shows, including Are You Being Served? And The Generation Game.
Now.
And on Larry's conveyor belt tonight, there's a barbecue set. Cuddly Paddington Bear.
Marmalade. I like marmalade.
Bernard Cribbins is sitting by a fire, listening to the Marmalade song on some headphones.
There were also Paddington records. Bernard Cribbins performed one of the very best, the unforgettable Marmalade.
I have no memory of it at all. It is me, but I can't remember when, where, why. It's gone completely from my mind. Can I see the doctor now?
It would, of course, be foolish to say that Paddington had, in his own small way, helped Britain through the dark, cold recession of the 1970s. But I just have.
Paddington goes to court.
Soon, Paddington pirates appeared, eager to cash in. The most notorious of these was a husband and wife team, a Doncaster-based duo called Eddie and Shirley Clarkson.
Why should this daft hairy bear catch on so well?
Daft hairy bear?
They were aided and abetted by their young son...
I've returned to edit all that out.
Jeremy.
That's why he was given wellies, you know, so he'd stand up. That was my mum's genius idea.
The Japanese don't like boots because they say the children in Japan bash each other with toys and it could be dangerous. So they don't want him to wear Wellington boots.
Early ones had Dunlops, size 4. Then later on we had to get our own welly factory because Dunlop couldn't keep up with the supply. And it got to the point in about, I think, 1976 where the only way you could buy a pair of Dunlop Wellingtons for your child was to buy a Paddington. One year we had shopkeepers on Christmas Eve begging for any old toy, and my Paddington was sold. Well, actually, when I say mine, I think it was my sister's. That's how desperate they were.
They may have been desirable, but for a very long time, the bears were illegal. That didn't stop the Clarksons flogging thousands of Paddingtons to Britain's top toy shops before Michael Bond's lawyers finally caught up with Jeremy's mum.
Got a telephone call from a man and he said, did you make Paddington bears? And stupidly I said, yes, we do. And he said, well, where can I get one? In London. And I said, well, Harrods, Hamleys. And he said, thank you, and put the phone down. And I thought straight away, that's a solicitor.
My mum started selling Paddington, still dimly aware that probably wasn't allowed, but there were no laws or rules on it.
Jeremy.
So my dad was summoned by Michael Bond's lawyers to London and met Michael Bond in the lift going up to the lawyers' meeting. And Michael said, I really like this bear. Doesn't really matter what happens in the meeting, but I want you to carry on making it.
Before they got out of the lift, Michael and Eddie had made a deal. And as in all good Paddington tales, the disaster was averted and everyone became best of friends.
She brought a bit of glamour into our otherwise drab Doncaster lives when he, Michael Bond's coming to stay.
The unveiling of a giant Paddington toy.
This was the high point in Paddington's 20-year career. But Michael was finding it very hard to deal with the fame. The insatiable demand for all things Paddington was overwhelming.
It all got slightly out of hand, and I thought, what have I done, you know?
In the late 70s, Michael separated from Brenda.
It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same for him, it wasn't the same for me, you know. I was married to him for 28 years. It is quite a stretch.
We welcome author Michael Bond.
He became very famous and people wanted to talk to him because he was famous rather than talk to him as a friend, I think. It was rather sad, that.
Do you find it more and more difficult to find the ideas?
It does become more difficult because I think he's done most things, but I think he's a sort of bear who's always going to be in trouble and always going to be stories about him.
Yes.
Sue Bond retrieves a guinea pig from beneath a cardboard box.
In 1981, Michael was married to new wife Sue and had written a number of books about an animal who wasn't a bear.
Olga, gotcha.
And who certainly didn't have Paddington's manners.
It turned out to be not quite as good as he thought it might be.
The tales of Olga de Polga, the mischievous guinea pig, sold well. As did Michael's series of popular books about a mouse called Thursday. And his series for adults about a French gastronomic detective called Monsieur Pomplemousse. But they were all eclipsed by Paddington.
It does seem to be a rule that you're only allowed one creation. And Michael Bond tried other things, but it was always Paddington. It had to be Paddington.
In 1983, Paddington was popular enough to star in his own musical.
Cross my paws and hope to die.
But it was never going to make it to Broadway, not even tooting Broadway. And it marked the beginning of his wilderness years. He was keeping strange company. Fewer children were falling under his spell. And Paddington's superstar years were behind him by the time a new hero appeared. Another orphan looking for a place called home.
Rosie Allison.
I was working at Heyday Films, which at the time was making the Harry Potter films. So we were looking for new family films to make, and I just returned to my childhood and my love of Paddington. Mm-hmm. Michael did come up with this wonderfully simple way of exploring deep and profound themes about our place in the world.
Come on, Paddington.
This first film of Paddington is about this discovering that your family is not necessarily the family you were born with, but the family that you live with.
This is wonderful.
The story really is one of acceptance and celebrating difference.
Home. Stars on the red carpet. The Paddington movie premiered on the 23rd of November 2014. And with a bear whose every animated hair seemed to quiver with life, it was almost as if he were real. As real as he'd always been to Michael Bond.
There was a huge amount of emotion around the idea of bringing Paddington to life on the big screen. Because for my father, you have to understand that Paddington is completely real.
A TV episode called Paddington Goes to the Movies, then a scene from the film.
London.
And at the premiere, my father, but because he was quite frail at that time, they asked me to take him up onto the stage. The audience all stood up and gave him a standing ovation. And my father the next day was talking to a friend and they said to him, what was it like? And he said, oh, it was absolutely wonderful. And he said, what was so lovely at the end was that they gave Paddington a standing ovation. Sorry, it's ridiculous. Sorry. That's how real Paddington was to my father.
I will never be like other people, but that's all right, because I am a bear. A bear called Paddington.
The Paddington movie became a huge success in the UK and around the world, but Michael Bond always gave the credit to his beloved bear. The second movie went into production in 2016. Michael Bond never saw the finished film. He died on the last day of filming.
On a shelf, a Peruvian passport, a small Paddington, and his tag. Sue sits at a typewriter.
And the typewriter, we've just been left the way it was, which is rather nice. When we got him with Nicole Kidman. She's very tall, actually.
The choice of where he was buried was simply that it was the nearest cemetery, but it happens to be Paddington Cemetery. It was like everything in Paddington's life. Things always turn out all right in the end, or they're meant to be.
He's got two Paddingtons, and I don't know who's put them there. It's very nice to have them. And the headstone engraving is so good. Please look after this bear. Thank you. It's rather nice having "please look after this bear" because you don't know which bear it's talking about.
Well, Paddington is very much a part of my life. He's actually very real. I mean, if I met Paddington going along a street, I'm sure he'd raise his hat to me. He's been a great comfort in my life.
Michael Bond gave Paddington kindness and understanding, a gift he continues to pass on to the world. But the essence of the bear is best expressed in Michael's favourite ever Paddington performance.
I'm singing in the rain.
A lovingly recreated frame-by-frame remake of Gene Kelly's legendary celebration of the joy of being alive, whatever the weather.
Paddington swinging from a lamppost with an umbrella, just like Gene Kelly.
The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on.
Michael Bond's legacy is that he taught us that you can be funny without being unkind. Just a really tricky thing to do.
There are characters who are cuter and there are characters who are sharper in their intellect, but I don't think any is as lovable, deeply lovable, as Paddington.
Paddington really is the lost best inner part of us, the lost inner child that we all feel protective of, our most optimistic, our most pure part, and almost our innocence.
I don't think there could ever be another Paddington. Good boy, Paddington, sit. And don't do that. Don't look at me like that. Give me the hard stare.
An animated Paddington doffs his hat and walks off in the rain.